Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This week, I am proud to have on a member of Congress that I think everyone knows because he's always on TV, and you would know him because he never wears a jacket. But his name is Jim Jordan. He's a congressman from Ohio. He's the newest member of the formerly House Intelligence Committee, now the House Impeachment Committee. Jim, welcome to the show. We have listeners from all over my district, the San Joaquin Valley ag area, similar to parts of ag area that you represent.
Yeah.
And then we actually have listeners from all over the United States even all over the world. And I want to thank all of you for listening every week. We get more and more listeners, and it's because we have on great guests like Jim Jordan. So, Jim, I'm going to start with a really tough question for you. Tell us why you don't wear a jacket.
You know, when you're in committees and you're fired up at some of these folks, particularly some people in the bureaucracy who are out to get your constituents. And I remember during the IRS thing, when we learned the IRS was targeting good people that you get the privilege of representing, I get the privilege of representing, and good folks all around this country, you just can't go after them if you got that jacket inhibiting you. And so I wear it around the president. And of course, you have to wear it on the House floor. But I don't know. It just sort of became.
You're not wearing one now.
I'm not wearing one now. I don't like to wear them. That's the bottom line. But I do like serving with you. I will tell you that. And real quick, and I know Devin doesn't like this because he's just a good guy working hard. But there are no finer people in the United States Congress than Devin Nunes, for all you listening. And for those of you who get the privilege of having him as your member of Congress, he is a great American. There are folks in politics who you wish weren't. Most of them are liberals, but there are people like Devin Nunes who you are glad chose public service. And it's an honor for me to serve with him and now to get a chance for the last few weeks to be on the Intelligence Committee with
So we'll get to that in just a second. But for those listeners who don't, I mean, they see you on Fox without your jacket on. But where are you from? Where were you born?
From Ohio. Grew up in right where we're, you know, my mom and dad are from that same hometown area, Urbana, Ohio, West Central Ohio. Married the pretty farm girl down the road. Polly and I have known each other since fourth grade, and went off to school, University of Wisconsin. I wanted to play middle linebacker in the NFL. I had life figured out in grade school. You know, I was going to be the next great middle linebacker. But I'm 5'7" and a half on a good day. So I had to wrestle, and the sport of wrestling has been kind to our family. So went to the University of Wisconsin to wrestle and did that.
You were also state champion, right? Ohio state champion.
Fortunate enough to win the state tournament in Ohio and then wrestled in college and then coached at Ohio State for a few years. But when you get married and have kids, you start to look at the world a little differently. And you get tired of government taking your money, telling you what to do, insulting your values. And so I just decided I was going to run in 1994 for state representative. No one gave us a chance. I announced I was going to run. And, you know, the party leaders in our county said, well, you're a nice young guy, because I was young back then. They said, but, you know, this two-term county commissioner is going to win. And I said, well, we'll see. You know, that's why they play the game on Friday night, to actually find out who's going to win. And we had a bunch of good people help us out, knocking on doors, working our tails off. And we won that primary, and we've been,
was a big Republican year in 1994.
It sure was. We took over the Ohio House first time in 20 years. And of course, they took over the U.S. House first time in 40 years, and then been in politics ever since.
And then you were elected to Congress.
Went to the state Senate, had a tough race in 2000. Where I'm from in West Central Ohio, it's about winning the primary. And we had a primary that was really, at the time, it was the most expensive state Senate primary in the history of Ohio. And we wound up winning. Just hard work. Had a lot of good people help us out again. And I knocked on, like, I think 6,000 doors in this one county, which was the key county. And we just worked hard. And good people helping you. You know, I used to tell all our athletes that hard work doesn't guarantee success, but it sure improves your chances. And so we just tried to follow that in politics and in everything else. And we won that race. And then a few years later, ran for Congress and been serving here in Congress with you and other good people now for 13 years.
And we've served together for a long time. And one of the things is I've always been on the Ways and Means Committee, where we do tax policy and trade policy, all the geeky things. It's not really – we only do something important once every blue moon, which, of course, we passed the big tax cuts.
Very important bill, yeah.
Jobs Act last year, last Congress. And then, of course, I've been down in the basement in the Capitol on the House Intelligence Committee, where it used to be one of the very best jobs in the world, because we get to work with American heroes.
Right.
And then we get to meet with really fascinating people, our allies.
Yep.
Sometimes we meet with people that are not our allies. We go to travel all around the globe, meeting with folks, and it's been a fascinating experience for me. And that is until President Trump won. And then we went through the whole Russia hoax.
Oh, God.
And I think, Jim, that's where you and I started. That's where our paths crossed, because suddenly the House Intelligence Committee became this investigative committee. And we had to rely on your committee's experience, because you've been on the oversight committee forever. You were on the Benghazi committee. You talked a little bit about the IRS. But one of the frustrating things that people have out there is that Republicans, we investigate, we dig up all this dirt, and then, but you guys can't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but I think people don't understand, we're a separate branch of government. Yeah. I think it was Trey Gowdy who said, look, I don't have a gun and I don't have handcuffs.
Yep.
And that's the frustrating part.
It is frustrating. And I know you get this every bit as much as I do. But when you're in the airport, one of the number one question I get is people walk up to me, and I'm sure they've done it to you, they'll walk up and say, when is someone going to jail? Because they are so fed up with this double standard. This idea, there's one set of rules for you and I and us regular folks, but a different set. If your name is Lois Lerner, if your name is Hillary Clinton, if your name is Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, and it ticks Americans off, and it should. And frankly, you're right. We can't put anyone in jail. We can't prosecute anyone. All we can do is get the facts out for the American people. And no one has done a better job of that, particularly on this Trump-Russia issue, than you have. If you hadn't first stepped forward, those of us on judiciary and oversight, we wouldn't have been able to get into this information. You're the one who first brought it out. And then we started to see Strzok and Page, these text messages, what Jim Comey did with his memos. And when he went up to – when it was President-elect Trump, and they went up to Trump Tower and tried to trap the president by talking to him about the dossier and then leaking the fact that they did talk to the president about the dossier. And all that unfolded in 2016, 2017, 2018, what we learned about the Trump. But it would have never happened if you hadn't first said something's wrong here and put the whole country on notice.
And one of the things that we did too on the House Intelligence Committee is Benghazi. The Benghazi investigation, we were actually the ones who discovered there was a problem there. And, you know, I know people are frustrated because, well, obviously we lost four Americans, four brave Americans, and there were survivors that were wounded. We worked with them. And ultimately, we brought those forward to you because you served on the select committee for Benghazi. But one of the things people are frustrated because nothing happened, you know, at the end of the day to Hillary Clinton and Benghazi. But there was one thing that came out of that that kind of ties a lot of what we're happening, that's happening today and what we're dealing with. That is that you guys discovered the Hillary Clinton server.
Yep.
And the missing server.
Yeah.
And then that led to the missing emails.
Yeah. I remember asking her in that long hearing that one day, Devin, when in front of the Benghazi committee, I said, Secretary Clinton, would you be willing to allow a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, to look at all the emails? Because remember, she had 60,000. She wound up destroying 30. And we only got to see 30,000. That went back to the State Department. And then they came to us. I said, would you be willing to allow a neutral third party, like a retired federal judge, to examine that? And they can decide which ones are personal, which ones are yoga, which ones are about your wedding and your daughter's wedding and everything else, and which ones are truly related to the work and our effort to figure out what happened in Benghazi. And of course, she would not agree to that. She decided, her and David Kendall and Cheryl Mills and all her lawyers on the front end. And the thing that bothered me most about that was that the night of the attack at 10:08, Tyrone Woods and Glenn Doherty are still on the roof of the annex fighting for their lives and protecting their fellow citizens. Ambassador Stevens and Sean Smith have already given their life for our country. But at 10:08 that night, she put out a statement, and it became the official statement of our government that evening. And she put out a statement that said, some have sought to justify this vicious behavior as a response to inflammatory material posted on the internet, blaming the video while they're still fighting.
Right,
and we know it was false because days later, the Egyptian prime minister in a call with Secretary Clinton that they declassified that we were able to use and able to see, the Egyptian prime minister told her, we know the video had nothing to do with it. It was a planned attack, not a protest. And yet she's lying to the American people while Americans are still trying to survive. That should never happen in our government, but it did, and she did it.
But ultimately, though, she paid for it because at the end of the day, it's probably the reason she didn't win, because of her lack of leadership during Benghazi, but also because she destroyed those 30,000 emails. And then fast forward to President Trump, and a lot of people have criticized him for always saying, hey, where's your 30,000 emails? But nobody ever talks about you, me, Jason Chaffetz, every Republican member of Congress. We had active investigations ongoing that we were trying to, like, hey, what the hell's going on here? We're trying to get to the bottom of why you lied, why people died, you know, American heroes. and your emails are missing. And so President Trump is basically just repeating what every Republican and any normal American out there who wants to get to the bottom of what happened in Benghazi, he's out there saying it.
Yeah.
And then it was an interesting transition, because then these emails come out in the 2016 election, which, guess what? They weren't Hillary Clinton's emails. They were like boring emails from DNC, like insider baseball stuff that didn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. And then lo and behold, President Trump does the impossible, and he wins. He becomes the president. And it was right after that point that this is when the Russia stuff got crazy. That's, of course, you know, we know how the Russia hoax ends.
Yeah.
But that's where the Ukrainian hoax begins, which they're all related. And one of the irony that the Democrats have continued to say is that Ukrainians didn't hack our election. Russians did. Nobody ever said that. In fact, it was the Republicans. I did this at one of our hearings. I held up our report. Where it was House Republicans were the first ones that had the definitive report that the Russians had hacked our election and had tried to sow discord in our election process.
Yeah.
And yet the media today continues to let, even in the last few days, they continue to allow the Democrats to say that we're denying that the Russians were involved in the election. It's so outrageous, and it gets to the fake news. But Ukraine, and we spent a lot of time talking about Ukraine, is very important because Ukraine high-level officials, including ambassador in Washington, D.C., had actually and very clearly antagonized Trump as a candidate.
Heck yeah.
And they had operatives who gleaned information from Ukrainians. So they had one named Chalupa who gleaned information, took credit for it, actually. And then, of course, we all know Fusion GPS. That's what the House Intelligence Committee got to the bottom of. Nellie Orr claimed under oath to your committee, to the investigative committee, that she got her information from a Ukrainian parliamentarian.
Lyshenko, yes. Right. No, you're exactly right. Russians interfered in the elections. Ukrainians certainly tried to influence the election, as evidenced by what you just described. A number of high-ranking officials in the Ukrainian government in the midst of the campaign, we're talking the summer of 2016, op-eds against the president, statements on social media against the president. Lyshenko, the guy who gave information to Nellie Orr, who was working for Fusion GPS, in an article said the vast majority of Ukrainian politicians want Hillary Clinton to win. So for Democrats to say, oh, they didn't do anything, it just false. But again, this is the mainstream press, and no one knows better than you how the mainstream press is not telling the truth so often when they're doing their so-called reporting.
Yeah, because we haven't seen one question at all the press conferences the Democrats do, or they make this bogus claim that we're not blaming Russia for interfering in the election. Not one of them have ever asked, what about the report that the Republicans did where they actually voted on it, voted it out? It's an official report of the House of Representatives way before Mueller. And I always joke, Mueller copied his information from us, which, by the way, our information's still classified.
Yeah.
There's still blacked out parts of our report that people can't read that's now out in the Mueller report.
That's crazy.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Okay. So then the Ukrainian hoax becomes the impeachment hoax. They turn the House Intelligence Committee upside down and they turn it into the impeachment committee.
Did.
And of course, at that time, I went to the leadership, talked to leadership, and I said, look, we need to have someone that's done these depositions for many years like you have. And I was really proud and honored that you would agree to come on to our committee, which really, you're not really actually on the Intelligence Committee because it's really the impeachment committee.
Yeah.
But you've been down in the basement. You've seen how this is working. And now we're headed into next week on Monday.
Yeah.
We're going to have this hearing where the House Intelligence Committee / Impeachment Committee reports are going to be presented to the Judiciary Committee, which you sit on. So can you give us kind of an early take on what that's going to look like Monday morning?
The short answer, we don't know. But let me just back up a second. Your leadership has been tremendous. And the idea that they get to have the home field advantage, they get to pick the referee, they get to call their witnesses, they won't let us have our witnesses, and they get to set the rules and then change the rules when they want. And yet we are still, as evidenced by public opinion polls out there, we are still doing very well because independents are saying this is ridiculous, and they understand the good job the president's done. But it's a lot of that has happened, I think, because of your leadership on the Intel / Impeachment Committee. We don't know what's going to happen Monday. There's going to be a report given from the intelligence committees to the judiciary committees. We don't know the format. We don't know if their counsel is going to give that report. Frankly, the guy who should give the report is Adam Schiff. He's the one who put himself out as.
Well, I volunteered. I volunteered to come and present the report.
You would do great.
To the Judiciary Committee. But they've decided they've changed the rules up. Like, since when? And look, we have great staff around here. We have great lawyers. Sure. Okay. But you're going to actually have this situation next week where you're going to have a majority of the time is going to be
staff asking staff
is questions. That crazy? And the members are going to be sitting on the sidelines. I mean, it's almost like Adam Schiff doesn't want to be seen in front of the TV cameras when he has to answer questions, real questions. And the same goes for the Democrats don't even want their own members to ask questions.
Staff asking staff, which one of those individuals has ever put their name on a ballot and directly accountable to the people? I mean, that is not how the United States Congress and our government is supposed to work. That is the most ridiculous. But that seems to be what they're planning to do.
And then the funny part is this Norm Eisen guy, who's a partisan hack who used to run this phony ethics group that would file all these bogus ethics charges.
They filed against ethics things.
Filed against me. That's going to be their lead staffer next week. I mean, the guy's a joke. He was one of these guys, and I'm paraphrasing here, but right when Trump was sworn in, this is the guy who went out and said, "Viva la resistance. The war starts today," as he's like still like getting his phony ethics group to file ethics complaints against us. That was, 3 years ago. Now, fast forward, they've brought this guy on as a part-time staffer to be their lead guy to ask questions because they're afraid. They won't let Schiff ask him. They don't want Nadler asking him. They hire this guy who hates Trump, obviously.
Yeah, right. And who asks questions in just their most recent, the first hearing in the Judiciary Committee on this impeachment. So look, we'll see how it goes Monday. But I'm like you. I think this whole thing has been goofy because never forget, the facts are on the president's side. The facts show that four facts, I always say it this way, have never changed, will never change, have always been the same. We have the transcript, no quid pro quo in the transcript. We have the two guys on the call, President Trump, President Zelensky, who have said there was no pushing, no pressure, no nothing. We have the fact that during the pause in aid, the Ukrainians didn't even know that there was a pause at the time of the call. And most importantly, they never took any action. They never promised, never started, never announced. They were going to do an investigation into anybody or anything before the aid was released. But somehow, we're going to impeach the president. And the reason they're doing it, and we should never forget this, is they have never accepted the fact that the American people wanted to send a guy like Donald Trump to this town to shake it up. And 18 days ago, Nancy Pelosi, on one of the Sunday shows, called the president of the United States an imposter. Speaker of the House calls the president of the United States of America an imposter? Are you kidding me? That shows the disdain they have for us regular people from Central California, from Western Ohio, and all us regular 63 million of us who voted for Donald Trump and he won an electoral college landslide. That shows how much they have never accepted the fact that he's the president.
Well, and the worst part is that Donald Trump himself, President Trump himself, admits he's not a normal politician.
That's why we elect him.
He knows he sometimes doesn't say things right. I think he sometimes, even you or I, are like, oh gosh, there's some tweets that we just put back in the tweet holster. But if he didn't tweet, there's no way he could get any attention because the media is so fake and phony.
Of course.
And the results have to speak for themselves. Look, at some point, we have the best economy, largely because of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that we passed. Also because the deregulating that Donald Trump has done and just a little local issue for the San Joaquin Valley, Donald Trump is the first president to give us back any water.
Yeah.
In my entire lifetime, it's going to be the first chunk of water we get back. We're poised to get water back finally because we flush it out to the ocean, right? We flush all this water out to the ocean. You've heard me talk about this for many years. Water goes out to the ocean. Trump comes to the valley and says, what? Because I thought you guys had a drought. Well, we have droughts all the time. We're in a desert. California's a desert. If you don't move the water from the Sierra Nevada mountains around the state, Trump went right to work. Followed up on his commitment when he was in the San Joaquin Valley. He said, look, I'm going to get this water back going. So in January, the new rules are supposed to be implemented.
That's awesome.
Okay, based on new science. But our own governor in the state of California is going to sue the Trump administration so that those new rules cannot be put in. It's just incredible.
Radical environmentalists. Devin, that's a great point. That's what the American people elected this guy for, and that's why they like him and why you and I like him so much. He does what he said he was going to do. And I always say this, we make this job way too complicated. Our job is really basic. What did you tell the voters you were going to do when they gave you the privilege to come here and serve them, their communities, their families? What did you say you were going to do? When you get here, do that. And that's what Donald Trump's doing. That's what you've been doing, fighting for fundamental principles, fighting for making sure that you don't have an FBI doing things they shouldn't be doing. That's what you've been doing. And that's why people around the country appreciate you so much and appreciate the president so much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you coming on, but I do want to ask you one last thing. You've been on the House Intelligence Committee, impeachment committee now for a little while. We want to keep you. I know you're not going to stay for very long. But what has been your worst part? We'll start with that, of being on the impeachment committee. And what's been your favorite part so far, being down in the secret star chamber down there with us?
First of all, I don't know how you do it down in that bunker. I mean, it's just like no sunshine, and you got to leave your cell phones outside. It's like I don't know how you do that day in and day out. So God bless you for doing it. The best part's been serving with you and the guys on your team. I mean, I actually felt. We came together as a group in defense of the truth, in defense of the Constitution and the principles and the American people's will when they elected President Trump. That was the best part. Working with our team, working with your team and your members was definitely the best. The worst part is how unfair it was, what Adam Schiff did. I mean, only their witness. Remember in the depositions, Devin, when every single Democrat question asked, the witness had to answer. But Adam Schiff stopped witnesses from answering questions from us. Certain questions that he thought might get to any type of knowledge about this whistleblower. It was a congressional subpoena. So that was the worst part. The best part was serving with guys like you and your team.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jim. And we don't want to lose you from the House Impeachment Committee, but we do hope the House Impeachment Committee comes to an end soon. It sounds like it might be, because it sounds like we may be voting on it here in the next few weeks before Christmas. But Jim, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
It whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We, the people, free and strong, fight through the dark night toward the dawn. Freedom marches on.
Afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. Our American. Oh, we kept our American.
paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.